I was in the gift shop at the hospital, just looking at stuff. They had a strange like array of things you could buy there, including some sort of like weird like version of Mastermind. Remember that board game Mastermind? It was very big in the 70s. It was sort of a you would break the code. It used to be done by a company called Invicta, and they had their packaging always included like these photographs of sort of like a James Bond villain type guy with this exotic woman by his side, and they're playing Mastermind, and this was like Mastermind Remastered. It was like this weird futuristic version of Mastermind. This is in the real world, by the way. It's not a dream. But that's very dreamlike. They just had like it was just like one shelf. All it had was like Mastermind Remastered. Like I don't know. Like is that a good game to play at the hospital? I guess maybe, but it's sort of like. You put these pegs down and these colors. Like maybe I'll put like red, green, yellow, and you'll put like a white and a black peg, and that means like one of them is. It's almost sort of like Wordle, but in it, like with colors. Anyway, yeah, I was just looking around there, and there was this there was a display with jigsaw puzzles. And one of them, I looked at it. I took a double take. It was of chocolate bars, right? Like a candy, and it had this big logo, Crackle, Hershey Crackle, this red wrapper, Krackel, and I did a double take. I looked at it. And I'm like, wait, yeah, whatever happened to that? The Crackle bar. Remember the Crackle bar? It was so weird because it's sort of a brand of candy I haven't thought about in a long time, but it was instantly very recognizable. I'm like, did they discontinue that? What happened to that Crackle bar? Because there's a genre of chocolates where it's just a plain chocolate bar, sort of a thinner chocolate bar. I mean, there's different genres of chocolate bars, of course. A lot of them are more log shaped. They have more exotic ingredients inside, like caramel or nougat, whatever the hell nougat is. What is nougat? Peanut butter, pretzels, whatever. Well, that's the Take Five, but you know what I'm talking about, like the more of the tube or log shape of candy. But then you have the more flat ones that are more chocolate bars, kind of like the classic Hershey bar. And then Nestle also had it, but then there was a certain one that had. I guess it's crisped rice. I guess it's kind of the same thing as Rice Krispies. How do you even make that? Like I've had rice. They're these compact little white tubes, right? Wasn't that one of Mitch Hedberg's jokes? I love to eat rice. It is a good thing to eat when you're hungry and want to eat a thousand of something. See, that's a good joke. How do they take that and make it into like? Like how do they? It's almost like it becomes this little, Rice Krispies, right? It's like a little, it's the rice shape, but it's all like blistered with all these like little bubbles on it. So do you just like if you were to just cook rice, I don't think it would like blow up like that. So what is this? Some sort of a? There must be some sort of a process. Is it like depressurizing it, or how do you create those crisped rice pieces? I never thought about that. See. Some things you just sort of, oh, well, they just do it. All right, let me look it up. See, crisp rice. But what I'm trying to say is that there was a genre of chocolate bars where you would just, in the chocolate, you would have this crisp rice, right? And it was always very good. And I remember the Nestle one more, Nestle Crisp, I think it was called, something like that. That's a more vague candy bar because it doesn't have its own identity, like Snickers or, like a Zero or Zagnut. It's just. Nestle's Crisp. It's sort of like, oh, the company Nestle is making candy bar with crisp. Right? Let me see. Crisped rice manufacturing process. I don't know. Okay, puffed rice. Is that? I don't know if that's quite the same thing, but it's. Puffed rice or popped rice are types of puffed grain made from rice commonly eaten in the traditional cuisines of Southeast Asia. So how do you do it? Traditional methods. To puff or pop rice include frying in oil or salt. Wait, oil or salt? Wait a minute. I can completely visualize. I have a pan. I'll put some oil in there, heat it up. But just salt? You can like fry it in. What do you just put salt? Fry in salt? Was it like liquefied salt or something? Western commercial puffed rice is usually made heating rice kernels under high pressure, see? In the presence of steam. Huh, interesting. Puffed rice or popped rice? Yeah. It's some kind of process. Wow. But you can make it at home. Yeah, I guess that's not really high on my priority list, but still. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about, right? The candy bars that have that crisp rice in there. And it was always like good. So Crackle, I remembered, if you look on the Wikipedia page, it's the miniature candy bars, right? And you used to always get those. They had these miniature candy bars. I remember my grandmother would have, my father's mother, Betty Nora, would have them out like in a bowl, like those miniature candies from Hershey. They're like, so basically had a paper wrapper and then a foil inner wrapper. And they were, you know, pretty small, like an inch across, like these miniature candy bars. And one of them was Crackle. The other ones were like regular Hershey's. And then like Mr. Goodbar, which is the yellow with has peanuts inside. And then, of course, the extra special dark. The dark chocolate one, which was always a little bit bitter. But we didn't mind it. But I think that was a bit of a different flavor, like the dark chocolate flavor. So anyway, so I'm like, is this only exist in miniature form? Is that sort of why? And apparently it does only exist in the miniature form. But here's what it says on the Wikipedia page. The Crackle was introduced in 1938. And let's see. Crackle contains milk chocolate and crisp rice. Crackle originally sold as an individual chocolate bar until 1997. So I'm searching my memory banks here. You would just go to a candy stand and you'd see like Mr. Goodbar, regular Hershey bars, and then full-size Crackle bars up till 1997? I suppose it's possible. I'm just not really remembering that. I only remember it as miniature. And for 17 years, it was available only as one of the four varieties of Hershey's miniatures until it was reintroduced as an individual candy bar in 2014? What? The full-size version has since been discontinued again, and it is now available only in the miniature version. What happened with this candy bar? I mean, is it that it just doesn't sell? How could it not sell? It's like their best candy bar, besides Mr. Goodbar. That's pretty good, too, but they never wanted to combine, like, the peanuts and, like, Mr. Good Crackle Bar. Like, they couldn't do that. It would be the red. It would turn orange. The packaging would be orange because it would combine the yellow of Mr. Good Bar and the red of Crackle. No? Good Crackle? No. Mr. Crackle Good. That sounds right. Mr. Crackle Good. That would be a good one. Yeah. Anyway. It's just strange. What other candy bar only exists in miniature or was demoted to miniaturization? You know? That is wild. What? It had almonds in it at first? What the hell's up with that? And it did have peanuts. All right, listen. This is the plot thickens here. Let's look at this. Introduced in 1938, Crackle used to have almonds in its formula until peanuts were then added in the recipe in 1939. Oh, okay, so, but both the almonds and the peanuts were removed in 1941 to be replaced with the new crisp rice balls that measure about 2 millimeters in diameter. Wow. The full-size 4.5-ounce Crackle chocolate bar reintroduced in 2014 contained roughly the same ingredients. Interesting. Although its ingredients typically do not contain gluten, Hershey's does not list Crackle as gluten-free. In the past, because grains can be contaminated with other gluten-containing ones accidentally. What? Oh, I guess, I mean, they could get a little bit of wheat could get in there. What's going on? Anyway. Wow. Anyway, yeah, that was, it's interesting. You know, I mean, I obsess on all this pop culture stuff and candy bars all the time, even though I can't really eat them anymore because I'm vegan now. But, yeah, it just jumped out at me as something that hadn't crossed my mind in quite a while. But anyway, yeah, I was in the hospital yesterday. As I mentioned, my father is, as we were talking about last year, he was diagnosed with cancer, but we thought it was under control, but it has spread, and so he had a surgery yesterday, which the surgeon says went very well, and hopefully this will help alleviate the symptoms and stuff. But I got there at like 6:45 a.m., and we were in the hospital all day. The main thing is just that the surgery went well, which we're very happy about. But yeah, at one point I just been there so many hours. I just started wandering around the hospital, just going to the gift shop and stuff, just to sort of like stretch my legs. It's pretty wild. But yeah, that's the good news is that things seem I think we've this procedure hopefully will help him. I'm going to be going back a little bit later. Right now, I'm in my basement. It's the morning, Sunday morning, 7:47 a.m. I have a cup of coffee, my phone, and my recorder, and that's all I need to do a show. I could just sit here in the basement, looking over to my left. I see the temporary Overnightscape studio I used last month for the anniversary shows, but I'm not using it right now. I'm just sitting on the couch, my reclining comfy couch, with the color Gasolina. It's just sort of beautiful blue color. You sort of imagine some sort of weird blue oil slick. It's called Gasolina. As soon as I saw the name of this comfy couch, we had to get this color Gasolina from Lazy Boy couch recliner. It's the real deal. It's awesome. But yeah, I took the last couple of days off work, and so I don't have too much time to record. So I figured I'd record early in the morning here. To get the show done. I got some of the Zulu coconut coffee. So in other news, I do feel like I need to watch all of the live action Star Wars TV shows on Disney Plus. So been watching The Mandalorian, and this week's episode featured an actor that his presence usually means the end. It really is when something jumps a shark. We're talking about Jack Black. You know Jack Black? He's an actor who sort of has this big personality, and he sort of every role he's in, he just sort of it's like that's Jack Black. He like ruins everything he's in. Remember, other than his own things, like what is that thing where he's like in a band and The Pick of Destiny? What's the name of that? I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, why can't I think of that? Anyway, for example, remember that King Kong movie? Whoa, Kitty, okay? Peter Jackson's King Kong movie that was just like, I don't know, I think it was really bad. And Jack Black like was just horrible in it. 'Twas beauty killed the beast, right? So Jack Black is now in Star Wars, okay? And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, uh-oh. Star Wars has jumped the shark so many times. It's like it's used to seeing sharks from a top view. That's how many times it's jumped the shark. But I'm like, oh no. As if it hasn't sunk low enough. Now Jack Black is in Star Wars. But I would say that as much as I am very frustrated with The Mandalorian, but this was not one of the worst episodes of The Mandalorian. And Jack Black's character kind of worked as I think his name was Captain Bombardier. He's like this fancy guy with a big beard who's like the leader of this like jerky planet. And his queen is Lizzo, the singer Lizzo. And then Christopher Lloyd is also in the episode. It's like all this stunt casting, but he actually is not bad. I couldn't believe that Jack Black was kind of okay in Star Wars. I mean, he can't help but have that sort of "Hello there, I'm Jack Black" kind of vibe, but it kind of fit into this Mandalorian, which to me, I don't know if they've ever stated it, but it really, the show basically seems to be, the vibe is kids playing with Star Wars toys and the stories that children would come up with playing with their Star Wars dolls. Is what this show is, because it sort of has that, feel to it, which, I mean, as an adult, I find it kind of annoying, but I get the vibe, if indeed that is the intent of the show. But it really seems to be, because this one had first of all, it was like definitely strongly referencing Logan's Run, which I thought was very interesting. I mean, Logan's Run, in fact, did come out before Star Wars, right? It came out in 76. And the design of Logan's Run is iconic. What I mean, a benchmark in sci-fi design. Takes place in this domed city. And if you look at Logan's Run, and there's also a TV series for Logan's Run, like they had these models of the city under the dome, and there's these like little monorails that go in tubes in Logan's Run. And it just sort of has that mid-70s like disco kind of vibe. Disco futurism, if right, that's sort of a genre that I've kind of noticed. Mid-70s, futuristic, with great disco influences. So, I mean, it's fine to pay homage to something like that, though it just sort of feels like there was another Star Wars TV show called Andor that managed to be fantastic without all this stunt casting and novelty stuff, like, and references to other things. It was just a great TV show that took place in the Star Wars universe. So it shows that it is possible. But I guess The Mandalorian is all about these stunts and fun stuff and stunt casting and, oh, let's get Christopher Lloyd, who was in Back to the Future and Adam's Family and everything. And Taxi, by the way, yes, along with Andy Kaufman. So in the show, and it was really blatant. I didn't read anything about it, but I'm just, blatant with those tube monorail things and the dome cities. Total Logan's Run reference. And they also had a very, like, this was very much like kids playing with Star Wars dolls would do this. There was like a bar, or that was only for droids. It was like a bar for droids, which was such, I mean, it is kind of a cool idea, but it just feels, again, just like childish, right? Like, just, which I understand, that's an angle you can take making a Star Wars TV show. But anyway, I think Star Wars survived having Jack Black in it, but it still was kind of annoying. And the baby Yoda is just feeling completely, in this season, is completely just sort of there. Doesn't have any real purpose in the story. Just sort of everywhere you go, oh, here's baby Yoda. Which they have an incredible like prop. I think it's actually a physical thing. It's not computer graphics, that, right? That it's kind of amazing, but still, the character, even there was a point where the character was, I think last season, it was much more about the character. Now he's just there. He's just hanging out with everybody. The baby Yoda Grogu. Wait, today is Friday. It's not Sunday. I'm getting all confused. It's Friday morning, not Sunday morning. Getting all confused with all this back and forth to the hospital. Anyway, on a completely different topic, obviously I've been driving a lot, going back and forth, to my father's house and the hospital and stuff. And I just in the past couple of weeks, I just started noticing this new thing, the new feature in driving that you see on the road, having to do with turn signals. So, driving an automobile is something that people have been doing for what, about 120, 130 years now. But in the early days, it was obviously a bit different and much more hazardous and much more involved. First you had to go and crank up the car. Remember, you had to crank up the car? What the hell's up with that? Oh, I'm gonna go driving. Let me crank up my car. What the hell? Then they figured out how you could use like an electric battery to start the motor instead. Listen, these things sometimes take a while to put together, these technologies. But anyway, right, when you learn to drive, you learn the rules of the road. And when you're going to be turning, you have what they call turn signals on your car. It can be the right signal if you're turning right, or the left signal if you're turning left. And you usually have a little handle, right? Usually, I don't even like, it's just so natural. I don't even like where, yeah, it's like a little handle on the left. You push it down to go left or push it up to go right. And it's you know, a way of informing other motorists what your intentions are. What are your intentions at this intersection? Ah, I'm going to turn right. See, I have my right thing. So what happens then is this light on the right side of your car on the front and the back starts blinking, right? And this is how it's been forever. The light starts blinking. So you look at someone's car in front of you. You see like a blinking like red light on the right. You're like, oh, that car intends to turn right. And there's a blinking right light on the left. And well, that car is intending to turn left. It seems so simple that it's not even worth talking about. But one of the things about turn signals is that it seems like the new generation of drivers, I don't know how long this has been going on, but people have stopped using the turn signals. They just don't use them. And it's so annoying because, right, there's some intersections where, for example, in the left lane, it's a lane where you can go straight or turn left, right? So, right, so when you're pulling up to the intersection, like I might prefer to be in the left lane and I see the person in front of me, their car, they don't have their turn signal on. I'm like, oh, they're going to go straight. So I may as well pull up right behind them because I want to go straight as well. And I'd prefer to be in the left lane. But then at the last second, when the light changes, then they'll turn their blinker on. And, oh, no, now I have to wait because there's all these cars coming the other way. Right? Or they just don't use it at all. You know, and a lot of times, like when I was doing a lot of walking around the town during the COVID of, you know, 2020, you know, you see a car coming and right, if they're going to be turning right, for example, right, you might want to stop because you're in there. But if they're right, they don't have their turn signal on, so you'll just cross the street. But then it turns out they are turning, even though they don't have their signal on, and then all sorts of confusion ensues. So I think a lot of people have been noticing that for some reason, less and less people use their turn signals, which is just kind of amazing to me because it's one of the basic rules of the road. And one of the basic, when you learn to drive, you learn to use your turn signals. And I don't know what it is. Driver's Ed, did they leave that chapter out of the book? You know, the art of turn signals. It's not an art. It's just, if you're turning left, you turn the left signal on. If you're turning right, you know, it's like, I also wonder if they ever had like a going straight signal, you know, where you could just sort of in the middle just to reinforce that you're going straight. I don't know if they have that signal. I'm sure someone tried to invent that. Someone probably thought they were going to get rich inventing the middle turn signal. Just going, I'm going to go straight. There could be another one. I'm just going to go backwards. You know, you usually don't go backwards like in normal driving, other than parallel parking. But that's a whole other nightmare. That's the worst. That's the worst thing about learning to drive is parallel parking. All right. Anyway, so people hardly use them anymore, which is annoying. But this new thing that's going on, and I haven't researched it, I probably should look into it. But basically, it seems like newer cars come with this new feature where the turn signal is a string of lights that sort of animate. So imagine a string of like 20 lights, and it starts with the one on the left, and then it lights up all the lights. And so forming this animated signal, like sort of animating in the direction they're going to go. So after 120, 130 years of, maybe even more than 130 years, right? Because it wasn't the 1870s, 80s, 90s when it started. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying. Why are they starting to have these animated turn signals, right? Is it that? Because I think I don't ever remember a single moment driving where I'm like, that blinking red light on the right side of the car, what does that mean? If only there was an animation that showed me what direction they were going in. I never thought that. No one ever thought that. Are they adding this kind of like animated, the lights animating in the direction the car's going to be turning because people have gotten so kind of, it sounds like just the dumbing down of society, right? Are people getting so dumb that they really don't understand what a turn signal is and that additional animated light will help them understand, oh, the car, just because it's blinking on the right side, I have no idea what that means. Oh, but that's this little light. Oh, I see, they're turning right. It's very, but I have never seen this before, but the past week I've seen like tons of cars that have that. And maybe some new cars just came out that have that, but it's, I don't know. Maybe it's been around for a while, but I just haven't noticed it. But it's kind of every time I see it, it just annoys me. All right, I pause for a minute there. Sequential turn signals. That's what they're called. Sequential turn signals. It's annoying. It's distracting. I don't like it. I don't dig sequential turn signals. It's too much. Anyway, a completely other topic. There's this TV show that I watched when I was much younger, called Connections, and this guy James Burke was the host. It was from Britain in 1978, and they must have shown it on our local PBS station, one of our local PBS stations here in the U.S. It was this guy who was this host. This show really reminds me of a show that came out a couple years later called Cosmos with Carl Sagan, where there's this very distinctive host that is sort of a scientist and a thinker that sort of leads you through all of these different segments about science and the universe and everything else. And of course, Carl Sagan's Cosmos was the gold standard of that type of show. That was so important to me back then. It was like the greatest thing ever. But before that, there was this show, and I don't know if I saw this one before or after, but Connections, where James Burke would explore how, like a catapult that was invented like 400 years ago eventually became like a toaster, like in your house. Like these incredible series of steps. Yes, the catapult that used to throw rocks at the enemies has become eventually a toaster, you know? And I remember several times talking to kind of like fellow nerdy people, my fellow nerdy Gen Xers, oh, do you remember that show Connections? And they'd be like, yeah, oh my God, I love that show. James Burke, right? Oh my God, that was one of the best shows. I was like bonding with my fellow nerds over Connections. But it's something that I don't know why it crosses my mind sometimes. I'm like, I always say I need to rewatch that show, right? So this morning I'm like, what the hell? Let me just see where it is. And it looks like on the Internet Archive, which is still up despite their legal losses in the past couple of weeks, right? They got sued by these libraries, the Internet Archive. Listen, the Internet Archive has a good thing going. Why do they have to like do all this book stuff to try to, you know, now they're being sued by book publishers. But anyway, there's a lot of other great stuff on there that may not be completely compliant with all copyright laws. But anyway, there's a lot of great stuff on there, including Connections. So I started watching the very beginning of the very first episode, and where it was absolutely stunned me, the very opening segment. Let's see if I can open this up here. And you'll get some idea about this show. It's Connections Episode 1, The Trigger Effect. Let's see if we can get this going here. Come on, work. Here we go. There he is, James Burke. Hold on, I'm trying to get the get this going here. Yeah, there's like this image of this device. I don't know, is it like a clock or some sort of device? You're zooming up. Oh, there's a spark, right? Yeah. Connections. And look at that typography. Oh my God. An alternative view of change by James Burke. And here we go. The very first scene. The trigger effect. And I just want to say the typography. Oh, I just messed it up. Anyway, the typography, it just looks like it has those blurry edges or those soft edges of like analog typography and then sort of superimposed on the video. It's like a Helvetica or something. Just beautiful. Sorry, I had to rewind by accident. But the opening scene is the World Trade Center at night, the Twin Towers, being between the Twin Towers, right? Oh, no, it's avant-garde. I'm sorry. Avant-garde condensed, maybe. I'm trying to pause without. Yeah. So this very opening scene. So if you remember the Twin Towers, right? The World Trade Center Twin Towers that were blown up in on 9/11/01. Remember that whole thing? No. Some people remember. It's so funny how like so many of these like kids that are now like you could be 20 years old now and 9/11 happened like years before you were born, you know? That's how far in the future we are. But anyway, I used to always go here between the two Twin Towers, and they show that sculpture, that weird golden orb sculpture that was there. But here it is between the two Twin Towers at night. And in fact, it was so weird. I remember walking through this exact spot on my morning commute back in 2001 before the event. And at one point, I went up to the corner of one of the buildings and I just touched it and looked up. I'm like, I wonder how long these things will stand. Like, it was a weird, I had so many precognitive moments around the World Trade Center before 9/11. That's a whole nother topic. But anyway, here's James Burke there. What a place to start this show. And I had no idea. Well, I must have seen this, but I saw it when I was much younger. Yeah, look at that. Like those, the golden. The golden ball statue, which they eventually moved over to Battery Park. I looked for it last time I was there. I didn't see it, but it was damaged from all the buildings collapsing on it, but it wasn't completely destroyed. So they moved it over there. And then those tall windows they had at the base of the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers. I remember it well. And it's like there's like water on the ground, like it just rained. Oh, I could just feel it. I could just feel that location. Ugh. I got blown up in 2001, but I used to love that place. And here in a trench coat is James Burke.
Would you do me a favor?
Yes.
I'd like to stop talking for a minute. And when I do, take a look at the room you're in. And above all, at the man-made objects in that room that surround you.
Okay.
The television set, the lights, the phone, and so on. And ask yourself what those objects do to your life just because they're there.
Wow, let's look
Go
around.
ahead.
There's the Overnightscape studio with the old mixer. There is a TV set and a phone and lights. How did he know? He's a genius. Well, I have my smartphone, not
Well,
a.
that is what this series is going to be all about. It's
Wow.
about the things that surround you in the modern world, and just because they're there, shape the way you think and behave, and why they exist in the form they do, and who or what was responsible for them existing at all. The search for those clues will take us all over the world and 12,000 years into the past, because it's in those strange places and in those long-gone centuries that the secret of the modern world lies. And you'll never believe the extraordinary things that led to us being the way we are today. Things like, for instance, why a 16th-century doctor at the court of Queen Elizabeth did something that made it possible for you to watch this screen now. Or the fact that because 18th-century merchants were worried about ships' bottoms, you have nylon to wear. Or why a group of French monks and their involvement with sheep rearing helped to give the modern world the computer. Or what medieval Europeans did with their fire in winter that led to motor car manufacture. The story of the events and the people who, over centuries, came together to bring us in from the cold and to wrap us in a warm blanket of technology is a matter of vital importance.
Look, he's taking the revolving doors into the World Trade Center lobby. Oh, man.
Since more and more of that technology infiltrates every aspect of our lives, it's become a life support
The
system
elevator
without which we
bay.
can't survive. And yet,
He's going in
how
the
much of it do we
elevator.
understand? Do I bother myself with the reality of what happens when I get into a big steel box, press a button, and rise into the sky? Of course I don't.
Wow. Wow, they're inside the elevator shaft. This is quite a show. Look at this. showing all these analog electronics. There he is at the top of the World Trade Center now.
I take going up in the world like that for granted. We all do. And as the years of the 20th century...
The cinematography is so cool. Just him there at night with all this moody lighting. Oh, my God.
By. The things we take for granted have multiplied way beyond the ability of any individual to understand in a lifetime.
And he's there. There's a red blinking light that's lighting him up. It's so cool.
The things around us, the man-made inventions we provide ourselves with, are like a vast network, each part of which is interdependent with all the others. I mean, cross the road. Whether or not a car coming around the corner knocks you down may have something to do with the person you've never met fitting the brakes correctly. Change anything in that network, and the effects spread like ripples on a pond. And all the things in that network have become so specialized that only the people involved in making them understand them. I don't mean use them. Anybody can use them. Down there is one of the biggest, most complex cities in the world, full of
people. Wow, it's an aerial shot.
As if they understood them.
This show must have had a big budget. Taking a helicopter filming. Oh, there's a World Trade Center.
All the other major high-density population centers scattered across the Earth is a technology island. It can neither feed nor clothe nor house nor warm its inhabitants without supplies from outside. Without those supplies, the entire massive structure and the teeming millions it encloses would die.
Coca-Cola sign.
And yet, in cities everywhere, we act as if that were not so. We have no choice. The pace of life in New York is set by the pace of the technology that serves it.
You just incredible have to B-roll here.
I'd like you to meet a few people who were in or near New York City on a November evening over a decade ago. And the reason I'd like you to meet them is because they all have one thing in common. They were all brought to a sudden and catastrophic realization of how vulnerable they were. How dependent
the blackout.
On one aspect of that technological...
Anyway, you get the idea. Yeah, there's been several big blackouts in New York City. But that's a great show. I got to keep watching. I'm completely stunned at the quality of the filming of it. I mean, it's beautiful, amazing. But I remember just being so impressed with that show. But I haven't, you know, the show is kind of lost to history now. Connections, James Burke. Anyway, in other news, there's going to be a solar eclipse tomorrow that is somewhat visible here in New Jersey, but there hasn't been a lot of hype about it because it's not going to be a complete eclipse, but it's going to be, I think, like almost like 80% covering the sun, but I've experienced those, and you can't really, I don't know if you'd particularly notice it, because even, you'd think it'd get darker, but... I remember a few of them, like if you look at like outside, like if there's like a bush and you see the sun shining through the bush, all the little, sort of bits of the sun you see through the shadows of the leaves and stuff are all little crescents, right? So it's sort of like this rare phenomenon. Let me see the details of this one, though, because I want to, hold on 1 second here, paste. Why do I still have to copy and paste all these links? You'd think by now it'd all be automatic. Yeah, look, April 8th, 2024. Wait, what? I thought it was 2023. Wait a minute. So it's a year from tomorrow? Hold on. I can't believe I messed up. Is it? Wait, it's supposed to be 2023 now. It's not, yeah. Oh, my God. Let's see. But I thought there was supposed to be one tomorrow. Oh, man, I'm so wrong. How did it... Solar Eclipse, New Jersey, 2023. All right, well, we know what we're doing a year from tomorrow. We're going to watch the eclipse. Wow, I don't... Yeah, I was completely wrong. It's next year. Great. Now I don't have to worry about finding my eclipse glasses, which I wind up losing after every eclipse. You know, you get these special glasses so you can look at the sun without hurting your eyes. Yeah. Okay. But of course, we had that total eclipse of the sun few years ago. Remember, I was in Bryant Park and I recorded the whole thing. It was called the Eclipse episode. That was the only time I ever personally saw a total eclipse of the sun. That was so cool. It was awesome. Because somehow, like, there's certain parts of the world that always seem to get it, you know, like Southeast Asia, they always get the eclipse. But here in New Jersey, very rarely do we get it. I don't know why. Why did they set up the eclipses like that? Who are they? Who sets up these damn eclipses? I don't know. So on a completely different topic, there's a phenomenon known as gachapon, which is, this is just what it says here. Gachapon is, they're saying it's a trademark of Bandai, among the variety of vending machine dispensed capsule toys that originated in the 1960s. It became popular in Japan and elsewhere. Gachapon is the onomatopoeic of the two sounds gacha, for the hand cranking action of a toy vending machine, and pon, for the toy capsule landing in the collection tray. Gachapon is used for both the machines themselves and the toys obtained from them. See, this is interesting because when I was growing up, we would just call them the machines, right? It would be in a supermarket, and they still have them, you know, you still see them. In the past, you would put like a coin in a slot, and then you would just turn this little crank. And by doing that, you sort of pushing one of these capsules from the bottom of the hopper into the exit tray. So it's like a little vending machine. And, you know, sometimes they would have gumballs in them, but the best thing was just the little toys you could get. And we always loved them. Mommy, the machines. You always had to get something out of the machines. But I guess Gachapon has gotten to the point now where they're like in a, you buy them in a box and it's sort of like you get a random one, right? So remember, like in the earlier days of the show, I always was into Rement, which was a brand of these little miniature objects, which I'm assuming was a type of gachapon. But one came up on my feed recently that was, I thought was quite interesting. It was Denny's gachapon. You know the restaurant Denny's, which, I mean, I've been to Denny's. It's not something I that's really on my radar much, but you do see Denny's around here, Denny's restaurant. I guess, what's the concept of the restaurant? Is that they were sort of like a place that had sort of comfort food, open 24 hours a day. But they do have it. They are in Japan. And it almost looks like the logo in Japan is almost like an older 60s version of it. But the Denny's gachapon here, let's see. It's a very cool little object. I would just love to have this box, but I'm not going to get it because I have too much junk as it is. But it's these detailed recreations of the actual food you can get at Denny's. It's like just super detailed. Just like with, Rement, it's like these plastic reproduction of everyday objects. So this gachapon is Denny's Family Restaurant, Japan exclusive mini food figures, right? And if you buy this, you get one of five hyper-realistic food figures at random. You can get the Devil's Brownie Sundae. Why is it called the Devil's Brownie Sundae? Is it like devil food cake? Bread and corn soup. Hamburg. What is the Hamburg? Is that like a hamburger? Cheese, almond rice. And there's also, you can get the Denny's sign. This looks really cool. Yeah, because like the Denny's sign is just sort of freestanding, but then the food products are like super detailed miniature food. Let me see if I can zoom in here. Yeah, there's the Devil's Food Brownie Sundae. Yeah, really detailed stuff, including the spoon and the fork. Wow. I want to get this. How much is it? Oh, I lost the link. Hold on. Let me paste the link back in here. Why am I pasting links at this point in history? Copy and paste. So yeah, there's this website here, Sugoi Mart, and they have tons of gachapon. There's like, what is this one? Little, it has like miniature pill bugs, beetles, and armadillos, but they're all sort of at the same scale. That's weird. Frogs gachapon, fishing cats. There's like so many of them. vegetables shaped like animals, little bags of bread, turtles. What are some other ones? Oh, Pringles. Like you can actually get like little, and a lot of these have those hangers so you could hang them off your phone. Airport mascot. So like the X-ray machines from like the airport security line. You can get little miniatures of that. It's amazing. Animal toilet time. It's like different like cartoon animals like taking a shit. This is amazing stuff. Now come on. Any other good ones here? Miniature chair collection. They have bird butlers. They're butlers that are birds. Wait, let me look at this one. Bird butler. This is so dreamlike. Bird butler collection. You can get one of five bird butlers: crow, owl, crane, bald eagle, or sparrow. Only $8. I mean, that's a bargain for a bird butler. Come on. And they're all just sort of like bowing, with like one wing, like sort of over their body as if they put their hand out and are bowing. The bird butlers. Oh, there's so much crap to buy in this world. It's amazing. Tempura on legs. That's very disturbing. It's like shrimp tempura, but it has like human legs. What the hell? Why? Human leg tempura. Pizza La. Like little miniature pizzas. That must be some sort of pizza chain in Japan. Pizza La. The story of a wooden horse and kitten. Wait, what is this? They're little kittens riding wooden hobby horses. Story of a wooden horse and kitten. And the possible cats are Ragdoll, Russian Blue, White Cat, Scottish Fold, and Calico Cat riding. This is all very strangely specific. And then this is, I think, how I found this. I was searching for miniature vending machines. Light up hot vending machines. I guess vending machines where you get hot food. Grow your own cactus. Any other good ones here? Demon Slayer swords. What is this? Tired cats. T cats that are sort of sitting in a chair and are extremely tired. How about tr the train station bento box? These are the kind of foods you can get at a train station. So there's some pretty wild stuff. More retro vending machines. There's the Denny's. This is just what's available now. This is like a huge collecting field. Macho Man lid closures. Oh, I guess to help close the lid of your noodle cup of noodles. Dotor coffee shop charms. What? Miniature furniture, Back to the Future cars. There's just so many. And then there's like Real Delicacy mini snack keychains. And it's so basically it's like a these, what the hell is it? It's this kind of plastic jug with some sort of weird snack inside, but it's been miniaturized. So you can get the sword tip squid, vinegar squid, cheese, kamaboko, kushikatsu, or scallops. Stuff is awfully specific. Dangerous organisms. What are the dangerous organisms? I like this one. Dangerous organisms. You could get monkey A, monkey B, bat, or scorpion. Yes, monkeys, bats, and scorpions. That would make a great fighting team. These are really cool. No, I'm not gonna get them. I can't. I can't have too much junk as it is. All right, one more. What's another good one? Famous Japanese sake, so mini sake bottles. That's good stuff. Anyway, there you go. Gachapon. More things from Japan to obsess on. Anyways, today's episode is known as Poly Exacta Mundo. This is episode 2002. See, we're on the next 20 years now. Hold on, I just want to find this image. Yeah, it's interesting because this show art is related to last episode show art. So last episode, I had this image, this picture I took when I was at the Clifton Commons, the parking lot by Barnes and Noble, and I just saw the trees and that fence, and then the shopping center across the highway. Thought it was a great picture. So last episode, I the show art had that image with the bezel of the arcade game Frisky Tom superimposed over it. This one, I simply took that off, and it's more of that same image, which I think is a very striking image. And then I do have the picture of our book, our brand image, the Overnightscape Underground, a radio station inside a book, is there in the lower left. And then today's episode is called Poly Exacta Mundo. And that is typeset with this font, Caustic Biomorph. And above that is just magic. The Overnightscape is typeset in Magic Carpet, but Poly Exacta Mundo is in Caustic Biomorph. It was from this font collection from the Font Shop. Font collections. It came in this cardboard box, and it came on floppy disks. So I actually bought that font years and years ago. Caustic Biomorph, so it's sort of black type with an orange outline. Poly Exacta Mundo. So this is sort of a part two of the previous show art. And so what does this mean, Poly Exacta Mundo? So Exacta Mundo is this catchphrase. I think it was from Fonzie from Happy Days. Exacta Mundo. Exacta Mundo! I cannot explain how popular Fonzie was back in the 70s. As we talked about last episode, a TV show like MASH, that was, you know, Happy Days was pretty much on that same level as just this monstrously successful show that everyone watched and talked about. But now, talking to my nephew, who's 17, and his girlfriend, I was talking to, they never heard of MASH, which is understandable, right? It's just the way of the world, something that was everywhere, so overexposed. It now, in a few decades, is completely washed away from history, and people never heard of it. I'm sure a lot of people the same age never heard of Fonzie. The term, where does the term Exacta Mundo come from? Exact plus a mundo. Jeez, wow, thank you. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Popularized by the character Fonzie on the sitcom Happy Days. Interesting. How do you use Exacta Mundo in a sentence? What? Yeah. Perfecta Mundo, Correcta Mundo. I know I found some sort of explanation as to... Ah, okay. Conceivably derived from exactamente, Spanish for exactly. Okay, so Fonzie may have heard someone saying exactamente, right? And then it's sort of as misremembering it, exactamundo. It is used primarily by U.S. non-Spanish speakers. The Fonz, a hip, irreverent character on the... Who's writing this? On the 50s TV show, The Happy Days? No, it's a 70s TV show that takes place in the 50s called Happy Days, not The Happy Days. Jeez. Is responsible for some of the earliest recorded utterances, though it's likely to have been used before. The second half of the word mundo possibly results from mishearing exactamente in another context. Mundo, world, in Spanish. Interestingly, the understood meaning has nothing to do with the meaning world. Even so, in Spanish, it might translate to exact world, though the gender of exacta renders the phrase grammatically correct. What? All right, whoever wrote this is, yes, Exacta Mundo. So I combined that with the prefix poly, you know, like polygon or, you know, something that means many. So it's sort of Poly Exacta Mundo is kind of an internal contradiction, right? Like it's exactly one thing, but poly means it's multiple exactly one thing. So I don't know, I thought it was a cool phrase and kind of resonates with the concept that I talk about a lot, the multiple concurrent alternate realities or alternate timelines, Poly Exacta Mundo. I just like that phrase. And that's the story of that, the Poly Exacta Mundo concept. Yeah. Well, anyway, this was not perhaps the ideal situation to record an episode, but The show must go on. The overnight skate must continue. As we were saying, another 20 years, yes. And then another 20 years after that. Another 20 years, yes. We're going to have a lot of 20 years. Well, let's be reasonable here. There's only so many 20 years that any person can continue on in this reality. Anyways, thank you so much for patching into this episode of The Overnightscape. I'm your host, Frank Edward Knorr, here in The Overnightscape Underground, a radio station inside a book. And just go to onsug.com for all your onsug needs. Onsug, of course, is a word that means The Overnightscape Underground. It's the first letter of each part of the words. Overnightscape Underground. Onsug, O-N-S-U-G. Where you can hear all the latest shows. You can participate in a show called Overnightscape Central. We're currently in our Beatles phase, and every week we're doing another Beatles album. This week I probably should do Yellow Submarine soon. At some point over the weekend I'll do Yellow Submarine. That's their album, what, the 10th album, I think it is? Maybe. It's a very strange one because it only has four original songs on it. All the rest is stuff we've heard other places or George Martin string arrangements, you know. So anyway, but those are four good songs though. Especially Bulldog, Lying in the Rain, Some Kinds of Innocence Are Measured Out in Miles. Yes. You know you'll always get something special when you smile. You can talk to me. You can talk to me and get ready to enter
the other side.
Mazmweed, Fender's Oko, Magic Smop, and Oak and Pino were on a road trip in their van. They had been driving for days, and they were starting to get bored. "This is so boring," said Mazmweed. "I wish we could do something." "We could play a game," said Fender's Oko. "What kind of game?" asked Mazmweed. "I don't know," said Fender's Oko. "We could make up a game." "That sounds like fun," said Magic Smart. "Okay," said Mazmweed. "What should we call our game?" "We could call it Puppets on the Road," said Fender's Oko. "That's a great name," said Magic Smart. "Okay, here's how the game works," said Fender's Oko. "Each of us will take turns being the storyteller. The storyteller will make up a story about the puppets on the road. The other puppets will have to guess what happens next." "That sounds like a lot of fun," said Mazmweed. "Okay, who wants to go first?" asked Fender's Oko. "I'll go first," said Mazmweed. "Okay," said Fender's Oko. "Start your story." Mazmweed took a deep breath and began his story. "The puppets were on a road trip," he said. "They had been driving for days, and they were starting to get bored. They decided to stop at a rest stop to get some food and use the bathroom." As Mazmweed continued his story, the other puppets began to guess what would happen next. "I bet the puppets will meet a friendly stranger at the rest stop," said Fender's Oko. "I bet the puppets will get lost in the woods," said Magic Smart. "I bet the puppets will find a treasure map," said Oak and Pino. Mazmweed continued his story, and the other puppets continued to guess what would happen next. "The puppets stopped at the rest stop," said Mazmweed. "They got some food and used the bathroom. Then, they went outside to explore." "I told you they would meet a friendly stranger," said Fender's Oko. "The puppets met a friendly stranger at the rest stop," said Mazmweed. "The stranger told them about a nearby woods." "The puppets decided to go for a walk in the woods." "I told you they would get lost in the woods," said Magic Smart. "The puppets got lost in the woods," said Mazmweed. "They wandered around for hours, trying to find their way back to the rest stop. Finally, they came to a clearing. In the middle of the clearing was a treasure map." "I told you they would find a treasure map," said Oak and Pino. "The puppets found a treasure map," said Mazmweed. "They followed the map to a nearby cave. Inside the cave was a treasure chest." "The puppets opened the treasure chest and found gold and jewels." "I'm so glad they found the treasure," said Fender's Oko. "Me too," said Magic Smart. "Me three," said Oak and Pino. "The puppets took the treasure and went back to the rest stop," said Mazmweed. "They used the treasure to buy a new van." They drove away, happy and content. The puppets continued to play puppets on the road for the rest of their road trip. They had a lot of fun, and they made up a lot of great stories.
long as we have a working weapon by the end of June.
I haven't had a working weapon since Korea.
When the military runs short on brains, they go hunting at Pacific Tech, an exclusive institution for outstanding intellects, where the superstar of smarts is Chris Knight.
You have a jacuzzi?
Absolutely.
His hobbies violate the laws of gravity.
What are you doing out there?
Floating, sir.
His homework could win a Nobel Prize.
He's one of the 10 finest minds in the country.
And his IQ is higher than most people can count.
I can't stand it. Have you ever seen a body like this before in your life?
She happened to be my daughter.
Oh, well, then I guess you have.
But when Chris makes the scientific discovery of the century...
You did it.
His classmates want the credit.
You're not number one around here anymore.
His professor wants the publicity.
Hi.
That's it.
And the military wants to use his discovery as the ultimate weapon.
This is not good.
So Chris is about to turn getting even into a science.
Hostiles on the excavator. Hostiles are gone.
And show them.
Roger. Open bomb bay doors.
They should never try to outsmart.
Let me have it!
A real genius.
It's no longer lasing efficiently. It's not shutting down.
We're shutting down.
Real genius.
What will fashions be next year? Dallas gets the preview look here in the Apparel Mart, the only building of its kind. Not just a building, but a concept in merchandising that had never been built before and may never be equaled again. It's four stories high and covers four city blocks. It's the complete fashion showcase. 1,250 permanent showrooms. 350 transient showrooms, 1,300,000 square feet, and the only thing in the building is fashion, the merchandise, and the shows, and more merchandise, and more shows. And the incomparable fashion showplace, the Great Hall. Every show in this room has to be special. Nothing small can take place here. The Great Hall. A football field would fit inside it. ...4,500 people can come to breakfast and to see the shows and the merchandise and more shows and have a drink or lunch and visit and enjoy market and never leave the building. 10,000 can eat here in a day, anytime they want to. If they get tired, they can rest by themselves without having to bother anybody or be obligated to anybody. Market is a chicken and egg sort of thing. Manufacturers won't exhibit unless the buyers are there. Buyers won't come unless good lines are available. Dallas has the goods and the buyers and the excitement. Buyers buy more goods, and the goods they buy sell better in their stores. That's the truth, and they'll tell you so.
Far superior, very superior, matter of fact.
Right in the neighborhood of 7,600 manufacturers show under one roof right here. Nowhere else in the world is this done.
I guess the people. I enjoy coming from California, and the people are just really great here.
Yes, you have I don't know how many thousands of manufacturers under one roof. It's so easy to see so many lines so quickly. It's an efficient way to buy merchandise.
Beautiful. Love it. It's one of the best in the country.
And
It's just great. And there is nothing that I can't buy here that I have to go to New York, California, or Europe for. That's why I love this market.
Market Center, the center of world trade.
Walking to the Taj Mahal in the Coca-Cola Pavilion at the New York World's Fair. This is part of a tour around the world through the eyes of Coca-Cola. We're now standing in front of the fountains at the Taj Mahal. In the background, you can hear the music of the lute and the water of the fountains as they give a very vivid and beautiful descriptive look at the picturesque Taj Mahal in India at the Coca-Cola Pavilion. Now as we walk on further, we go through an alleyway which brings us to Switzerland. As a matter of fact, it's to the Bavarian Alps, where we now go into a ski lodge in the Bavarian Alps. Can look out of the windows here and see the Alps in the background with the snow on them, all unbelievably realistically made, so that it is just as though you were there. In the background now you can hear the singers in here singing their songs, Bavarian folk songs, typical of what you might find in a ski lodge. And now we continue on our tour through the Coca-Cola Pavilion. The idea of this exhibit is to show the people at the World's Fair visiting this exhibit the many areas in which the products of the Coca-Cola Bottling Company are found. We're now walking into Angkor Wat, built in the 12th century AD, which is in Cambodia, where we can see some ancient Cambodian relics. In the background, you can hear the jungle sounds. As we look out, we can see fireflies in the trees in this jungle. We're walking underneath an ancient replica of an archway in a very beautiful, descriptive, and colorful replica of an actual forest in Cambodia. Of course, all of this is just one of the sections in the Coca-Cola Pavilion's tour of the world. In the background now you can hear the waterfall, again and still in the jungle, the animal sounds, the birds and the trees. The pavilion is known for having a lot of very minute details that you have to be very careful to watch, such as the frogs and the forester who actually croak and you can see them breathing. As we continue walking through the pavilion, the smells change. Each area has its own smell, and now we're standing on the deck of a ship supposedly docked out of Rio de Janeiro. You can hear the music in the background from the deck. You can see people through the windows, the silhouettes of them dancing. Off in the distance, you can hear the boats and the seagulls in the water in the harbor at Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Here, even the deck of the ship rocks, and you can feel the motors underneath you as they vibrate. And then at the final section of the Coca-Cola exhibit is a gallery of art from Atlanta, Georgia, which of course is the home of the Coca-Cola Bottling Company.
Legends of the Superheroes. For centuries, the world has been protected by a group of extraordinary men and women who have dedicated themselves to fighting crime. Ladies and gentlemen, the world's mightiest mortal.
Shazam!
Endowed with the wisdom, strength, and courage of the gods, Captain Marvel fights a never-ending battle against evil. Guardian of the universe and possessor of an incredible power ring, the Green Lantern has the ability to perform amazing feats against evildoers. Sentinel of the skies, winged phantom of the night, the Hawkman fights the evils of the present with the weapons of the past. Combining beauty, wisdom, and physical prowess, the Huntress fights a constant battle against crime and injustice. Joy of the oppressed, wonder of the multitudes, the Flash! This crime fighter is swifter than the speed of light, fleeter than the rapidity of thought. With the uncanny ability to generate earth-shattering sound waves, the Black Canary fights a relentless battle against criminal injustice. With his reckless grin, devil-may-care courage, and incredible gymnastic skills, Robin, the Boy Wonder, is Batman's crime-fighting companion. His symbol a frightening creature of the night, his disguise strikes terror into the criminal heart. Batman, the Cape Crusader, has pledged his life to fighting the forces of evil. Somewhere, in a secret hideout located on a remote island, the arch-enemies of our superheroes have gathered to hatch a diabolical plot to destroy the world.
Nancy's joining me because the message this evening is not my message, but ours. Despite our best efforts, shortages of marijuana are now being reported. From the early days of our administration, Nancy has been using marijuana on a daily basis, and her personal observations and efforts have given her such dramatic insights that I wanted her to share them with you this evening.
I yearn to find a way to help share the message that drugs open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us as a precious gift to his children.
And drug abuse is not a crime. Drugs and excessive alcohol are used by former Attorney General Meese.
Drugs help us create love and hope and trust and confidence.
Being friends to others is the best way of being friends to ourselves.
It's up to us to change attitudes and just simply enjoy life to the fullest.
And in the most important area, individual use, we see progress. The U.S. military has more than tripled the use of drugs among its personnel since 1980. Tonight, I can report to you that Vice President Bush smokes marijuana regularly. And there's one more thing. Nancy and I are hooked on heroin.
Each of us was once strung out on several drugs.
Here in the White House, drugs are a constant temptation, but we still have much to do. Our goal is to expand drug trafficking at all levels of government and in the private sector. Help us.
Obviously, we heavily edited this piece. Besides, some people don't need to take drugs to be dopey.
I'm Woodsy Owl. Please give a hoot about campgrounds, because if you don't give a hoot,
who will?
It's a car.
It's a truck.
It drives like a car.
It hauls like a truck.
It's Rampage, America's first sports pickup. Order it at your Dodge dealer now.
Thank you.
Dream Test, the story of four guys with just one thing on their mind.
God, does that girl have a great body?
Where do they get these girls?
I always wonder, why don't I meet girls like that?
How do they get these girls to do this stuff?
To get in the movies. People will do anything.
Screen Test. And so our heroes decide to lure girls by making their own sexy movie. Because everyone wants to be a star.
Nice pig.
The casting call goes out, and from under every rock come hopeful candidates looking for that big break, or maybe just a little outrageous action. You've never seen auditions like these before. It's more than incredible. It's insane. But best of all, it works. Screen Test. Suddenly, it's girls, 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 ready for lights, camera, and especially action. But just as our heroes are getting what they always dreamed of, the mob steps in. And now it's a race to see whether our red-blooded young movie moguls will finish their film or whether their film will finish them.
Don't kill us!
Screen Test. It's gross encounters of a sexual kind when the girls think they are starring in a movie and the boys have other ideas. Getting there is all the fun, so get set for a wild roller coaster ride that puts the sin back into cinema. Screen Test.
Player, and the arcade is the arena. You focus your mind and propel yourself into a universe where you're the master of your destiny for as long as you can keep the trip going. This is the arcade experience. We're ColecoVision. We bring the arcade experience home with games like Donkey Kong with multiple screens, arcade controls, and arcade graphics that let you have the arcade experience at home because your vision is our vision. ColecoVision.
I'm Eric Paulson. Welcome to PM Magazine Leads Off tonight. I'm at Sylvester's Western Store on Williams Boulevard in Kenner looking for some Western clothes because in our second story tonight, I'm going to take you to the first annual Urban Cowboys and Cowgirls Beauty Contest in Mississippi. But in our first story, we'll explore a treacherous coral reef as we search for sunken treasure. Now, these people will risk their boat and perhaps their lives to find that treasure. In her department's Ricky Polizzi will tell us about the local New Orleans group called the James Rivers Band. Dr. Marina Granick has information on why people are actually healthier when they get less sleep. And Linda Harris in our Discovery Department tonight tours Mexico City's fabulous markets, castles, and floating gardens. As I just mentioned in our first story tonight, we're going to take you sunken treasure hunting off the coast of Mexico. Now, we'll meet some pretty adventurous divers who will take PM Magazine's Rod Green along with them. I'm not much into the Western wear craze that is sweeping the country these days, but in our second story tonight, I will be along with a lot of other people. We're taking you to an urban cowboy and cowgirl beauty contest held recently in Mississippi. And we're going to find out who is the best-dressed cowboy and cowgirl around. Howdy. Well, for me, this urban cowboy stuff really isn't too much, and I probably never will be one, but for a lot of people, the John Travolta Western wear craze started a few years ago in this country is still very big. And if you're wondering how important it is to some people, we're about to attend the first annual Urban Cowboys and Cowgirls Talent and Beauty Pageant here at the Mississippi Gulf Coast Coliseum.
Appropriately kicked off with music from two urban cowboy entertainers, Burley and Brian.
Do you think that I should cry before I let this dream happen to me? Darling, I would rather see.
I know you think I'm more.
This rhinestone-studded duo claims to be the epitome of what the urban cowboy is all about.
The pageant is about us. Let's put it that way. It's about us, the urban cowboy people. And that's what we are. That's what we represent.
And that means this is going to be one flashy pageant. For a preview, just peek into the dressing room where the contestants are getting ready for a bronco-busting performance. These contestants have been in several talent and beauty pageants before, but for most of them, there's still an air of excitement. Well, at least most of them. There's always one blasé cowboy in every crowd. When the activities begin, the audience is treated to a diverse range of talents. There's a male dancer who pantomimes a gun-toting cowboy. And how would the Wild West have made it without some female entertainment? The competitors range from little tykes to adults, so it's no surprise to hear a pint-sized rendition of Elvira.
I'm singing Elvira. Elvira. My heart's on fire. Elvira.
This slightly older crooner quickly catches the eyes and the ears of the judges.
I'm gonna sweep for down in New Orleans. She's been traveling the highway. She's been doing things my way.
And one of the more popular contestants is a real dummy.
Billy, you know what you look like with this little hat on?
Yep, like a rhinestone cowboy.
No, Billy, you look like a little dummy with a hat on.
Better than looking like a big dummy with no head on at all.
Speaking of which, there are some urban cowboys who may dress the part, but don't necessarily feel comfortable about it.
You guys look good in this stuff. I feel kind of funny in this Western outfit.
Oh, no, you look natural.
You look good.
Are you kidding? You look I thought that's the way you always dressed.
No?
No, I've seen you with your tennis shirts, you know. But that looks natural on you. It really does.
I don't look stupid?
No. You devil, you. Of course not.
Well, dressing up in Western wear isn't so awkward when everybody else looks the same way. And in most cases, flashier than this cowboy. But these outfits don't come easily.
It costs quite a bit. Something like this costs about $75.
This was about $2.50. They have a daddy who can sew. I do all their clothes.
I feel pretty, and my mother got this outfit at Kmart.
Even in the baby's beauty category, you'll find some pretty fancy duds, too. Of course, nobody says you have to like wearing them.
'Cause cowboys ain't supposed to cry.
Like you did the other day, and not real fast and not real slow. You hear, Mama?
Okay, when she calls you, Mama, walk out there on that stage and be pretty, everybody. All right? Smile big.
Now, seeing all this parent participation makes one wonder who the pageant is really for, the children or the parents. The pageant's promoters, Kay King and Penny Sullivan, say it's the latter.
I think it's the parents.
Yeah,
more than the parents.
And I think they all enjoy seeing their children on stage. You know, they'll do anything to get recognition for the children.
This family affair applies to more than just tots. There are big boys and girls strutting their stuff as well. For Milton Williams, this is his first pageant, and he's already got his own philosophy on how to exude the urban cowboy image.
You know, everybody's running around in Western outfits and everything, and I put on my cowboy outfit, and I feel like a cowboy. And when I'm out of it, I feel like a good old down-home South Mississippi, you know, Southern boy. And I like, you know, just for that half a minute that I'm up there, I want to show the judges, hey, I can be a cowboy for a minute and a half or so.
The competition is stiff, but Milton has done something right. He's copped two awards, one for appearance and the other for fashion.
I just can't believe it. I'm so excited. I don't know what to say.
Well, don't say anything, Milton. Just take your cues from the younger, more experienced urban cowboys. While they accept their trophies, there are other little cowpokes out there riding the ranges in their dreams.
As I mentioned, this is the first urban cowgirl and cowboy beauty contest, but the promoters hope to make